From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of September 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll take a look at the cash grain market with Ben Pruce out at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility. That's near Spencer in the northwestern part of the state. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, and we'll hear all about the cash rent survey that USDA released at the end of the month of August. Our own Gary Schnitke from the U of I has gone through those numbers and has some interesting tidbits, and it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up on this Friday afternoon in Chicago. Corn futures September contract $3.39, up 7.25. December $3.38.5, 2.5 lower. March contract at $3.51, down 2.5. And May corn at $3.59.5, 2.5 cents lower. July futures there at $3.66.75, down 2.5 cents. And next year's December contract at $3.85.25, 2.25 cents lower on the day. Bean futures September contract 29.5 cents higher, $10.91 the settlement price. November at $9.85.25, 3.75 cents higher. January futures in the bean pit $9.92.5, up 4.25. March at $9.98.5, up 4.75. In July at $10.11, up 4 cents for the day. Bean meal at $4.08, down $18.70. Bean oil up 72 cents at $32.16. Wheat futures in the July contract, that's the new crop harvest month, down 7.5 cents at $5.39 on the day. Live cattle futures nearby October, $156, 27.5 cents, $1.10 lower. December at $159.25, down 45 cents. September feeder cattle up $1.42.5 at $229.47.5 on its settlement price. October at $225.92.5, up 32.5. Lean hogs in the October at $105.70, down 67.5 cents for the day. And December futures, $96.30, down 90 cents. Hey, make sure that you stay with us if you can for the second half hour on our home radio station. That's WILL AM 580 for Commodity Week. It airs on many of these other stations tomorrow morning, and of course on our website at about 4 o'clock this afternoon at willag.org. Our special guest today, Bill Tierney. He's at Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. October contract, $92.15 a barrel, 68 cents higher, rather lower. RBOB gasoline at $2.51.4, that's down a penny for the day. Ethanol futures at $1.81.4, 9 tenths of a cent lower. And the spread between the two is 70 cents wide. That's a tenth of a cent narrower than it was yesterday. October natural gas at $3.84.9, up 2.7, and diesel fuel at $2.73.9. A penny and 6 cents lower. Gold futures at $1,230.40, down $7.50, and the U.S. dollar at 84.23, and that's currently trading 0.065 higher on the afternoon. Let's take a look at the weather as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area on the afternoon. Outside our studios, by the way, we are currently looking at 59 degrees, and we haven't had any rainfall in the last 24 hours. This afternoon, we should head to a high of 61. We may or may not make it there under mostly cloudy skies. Tonight, a 30% chance of showers, mainly before 2 a.m. That's Central Time. Cloudy, a low of 45. A northwest wind tonight at 9 to 13, gusting all the way to 16. And then on Saturday, sunny skies and 63 degrees. Saturday night, mostly clear and 43. Sunday, sunny skies and 68. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 49. On Monday, a 40% chance of showers, partly sunny otherwise, and a high of 71. Cloudy Monday evening and 50. Tuesday, sunny and 71. Sunny on Wednesday and 71. And again on Thursday, mostly sunny. And I suspect we'll have combines rolling by the time we get to Thursday with a beautiful 73 degrees for the harvest time. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Let's check now what happened in the futures markets for this Friday afternoon, the 12th day of September. On the phone line is Mike Zuzalom. He's a global commodity analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael. Hey, I want to know from you, Michael, just exactly what it is that you think the corn market might look like at this point. Soybeans, too, and in particular, whether or not you have happened to have had any harvest happening in your area, if you can give us an update, I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, very little harvest being done right now here, Todd. We've just been wet enough, not too wet like some areas of Illinois and Indiana, but just wet enough to keep people out. I think they want to cut beans around here a lot harder than corn. Moisture levels in corn seem to be pretty high, and we've got the premium out here in the spot bean delivery, much like you do back there, but right now, we're not seeing a lot of cutting of beans, and in fact, this week's Atchison Globe on the front page was a headline story about the sudden death. We are one of the worst counties in the state for sudden death, so that's kind of influencing me a little bit looking out the back door. I'm going to drive north this weekend on Sunday and take a little mini crop tour and see how things are going up towards the Nebraska border and see if they're getting anything done up there, but here again, as you go north, those rain totals seem to have increased. And talked to KRVN, our friends up there in Lexington, today, and they actually talked about another 0.6 inch in the last 24 hours. So it doesn't seem like lots being combined, and certainly where they want to cut beans, not much going on.
SDS is a problem across parts of the Midwest. In fact, farmers more concerned about it, I believe, than the trade is at this point.
Agreed.
How long has the SDS, how long have you been hearing about it? Has it been more than a week or two?
Oh, yeah. I would say it started out here about a month ago, exactly a month ago.
In that case, then it will be a problem in the field if it's it shows up at state fair time, then it is likely to be a problem. If you happen to make note of it later than that, and this is, roughly speaking, this would be in my part of the world, Illinois, Indiana, and the central part of the state, then if it showed up in maybe that first week of September and the last 7 days, it's less likely to be a problem. But it is something I think the trade will have to come to issue with at some point.
At some point, and I think this is where, you know, as a week in review type segue to what you and I were just talking about, I think you nailed it when it came to the impending harvest that we're going to see if the rain models don't change here in the next 6 to 7 days. So you look at impending harvest, you look at the supply bill that we saw in the USDA report, and you know the most likely scenario continues for me to be an idea of a price change trend or a change in the price trend would be coming from outside examples or outside forces, a macroeconomic inflationary mindset that develops where the commodities are an asset that are allocated and bought into, or a geopolitical factor. It's not going to be at this time, because of the report especially, as we get into harvest, it's not likely going to be anything on a micro level, and I say that with the caveat of this weekend's frost potential first and foremost in my mind.
Just a couple of review numbers, of course. USDA yesterday morning releasing the latest crop production numbers and the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. It's the last set of numbers, what's left in the bin, that really makes the difference. And for soybeans, it went from 430 million bushels and it built to 475. And for corn, it went from 1.8 billion roughly and it built to 2 billion bushels. So those are the numbers you have to deal with. I suppose they were more bearish than you wanted to look at.
The corn number came in right with my estimate, so I was okay with the corn number, and I was very pleased that the world supply did not grow that much. The stocks to use ratio on the coarse grains actually only went up 0.1%, and that's because the U.S. production increase was offset by a great portion by China, Ukraine, and the former Soviet Union. And it was nice to see. This is where the wheat and the corn separate themselves and makes wheat the price leader to the downside still in the medium term, if you're talking about trends, in my view, Todd. And it goes back to the demand side of the equation. USDA lowered exports in wheat, raised imports in wheat. we got much better demand figures on the corn. So lower prices in corn is encouraging increased demand. We can't say that for the wheat. You can take issue with what USDA said as far as why the wheat demand's going down, and it's because of Canada. And I could take issue with that, but right now, as it sits, the corn report was much more friendly than the wheat, and it was even more friendly than the beans, because not only did we get the bean increase domestically here, we also got a big jump in the Brazilian crop forecast and the Argentine forecast, with traders already talking about, and even Safra's Mercado coming out today with, another 2 million tons bigger crop for Brazil than what USDA just gave us yesterday. So these are some of the global factors continue to be the major drivers, in my opinion, to why the funds on a microeconomic level won't buy into this market.
If I remember correctly, the stocks-to-use ratio for corn on the supply, U.S. supply-demand numbers, is about 15%. Is that right?
Yes,
I think?
That's exactly right. We have doubled it since the 2012 drought. That's right.
Yeah, and then for the global number, do you know what that ratio is like at this point?
Yeah, like I said, on the coarse grains and the corn, it's going to be about the same. We ended up being up about a tenth of a percent. For coarse grains, it was 17.8 versus 17.7 last month.
And more importantly, historically, what's a good stocks-to-use ratio on the global front? I know on
14. Yeah, you know, 14 to 15 would get the market's attention for weather problems or anything like that.
Okay, so we have a ways to go. So we still have a supply that is more than adequate on both fronts, nationally and globally. I suspect, have been talking to farmers on the cash side of this market because now they're thinking about cash. I'm going to be on the combine. What do I do with this? Do I store it? Do I store it at home? Do I store it commercially? And can you take both of those up? Because I suspect there might be a different answer commercially than home storage.
I think there is going to be, especially if you're talking about storing it commercially for only a short period of time. That actually may work the worst against you if these rail issues continue to develop and they don't improve much. And so not only would you see the basis continue to fall and no recovery in the futures, you'd also be tacking onto that some commercial storage. And I think if you have any kind of drying charges, that would really, really hurt your bottom line and your revenue per acre at these price levels. So commercial storage short term is really the toughest thing to have to deal with. There's really no answer to that question. As far as on-farm storage, the structure of the market, and we hit this on the beans a minute ago, Todd, I think the structure of the market continues to scream out at you, essentially, let those beans go, especially if you can get an early premium. Make as much room for on-farm storage in corn as you can. That has not changed. That probably won't change because of the nature of the basis and also the nature of the carrying charge in the futures market. And I think as a forward-looking market, you are already starting to see some pretty dramatic shifts in acreage starting to be talked about in Argentina, much lower in corn, much higher in beans, especially in Brazil. So South America is starting to promote an idea that the feed grains may gain in terms of price on lower acreage as we move forward. And so I think this is where the corn storage makes even more sense. As far as off the combine bushels, get whatever you have to sell sold so that you're not under that commercial storage issue. And at that point, then stop. But I would try, and I'm recommending pretty strongly, to really work hard at letting as many beans go as possible to make as much room for corn as possible.
Okay, so end users are then faced with a different problem because they need to pry this out of the... I'm assuming at these levels, you want the end users to try to pry this out of the farmers' hands, right?
In the case of corn, that's right. In the case of beans, they'll get it from the farmer because of these 350 and 375 over basis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're telling livestock producers buy and put it away if they can?
Can't do that quite yet. As far as actually what they farm, if they're farming the corn and feeding the same corn that they shell, yes. But if you're talking about if you need to buy corn, I've been getting some bids from elevators through clients, and they're not that great. I mean, spot corn, as far as spot off the
barge
right now.
We need another 2 weeks, don't we?
I'm sorry?
We need another 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is where I would probably wait and see if that basis wouldn't erode a little bit more as a buyer if you had to buy commercially. Now, like if you're inferring that you're shelling corn and you're saving it for livestock feed, oh, yes, put that away.
No, I was not. I was thinking about making purchases for larger end users.
So. Yeah, the commercial, I would not go after the commercial at this point because I'm just not hearing the basis levels I think are attractive yet.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
You betcha, sir.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting. Joined us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report to take a look at the marketplace. We'll do that again during Commodity Week. Our special guest this week, Bill Turney. He's at Chicago at Ag Resource Company. Jackie Vakes will be here at Stuart Peterson and Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities and Brian Stark of the Andersons. You can hear it immediately following the Closing Market Report on our home station, other places Saturday morning, and of course, always at willag.org. Now, here's your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey, with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the European Union today has imposed fresh sanctions on Russia, targeting some of its largest companies in a response to Moscow's actions in Ukraine. In the new round of sanctions unveiled in its official publication today, the EU closed long-term lending for a number of Russian companies. The EU also imposed sanctions on 24 individuals, including rebel leaders and senior Russian lawmakers. Meanwhile, the Bank of Russia today says that geopolitical tensions pose serious risks for Russia's economy, which, if accompanied by a drop in oil prices, may show nearly zero growth in the next 3 years. The central bank admitted that already imposed sanctions, including those that limit access to foreign borrowing markets for Russian banks and companies, will have a prolonged impact. With a final renewable fuel standard sitting on a desk at the White House's Office of Management and Budget, ethanol and oil interest groups yesterday announced new media campaigns in a digital tug of war to catch the administration's attention on what each side believes should be done with the RFS. The American Petroleum Institute announced yesterday that it was launching a television, radio, and online advertising campaign in the Beltway to press the White House to leave politics aside in finalizing the final 2014 volumes. Meanwhile, the Renewable Fuels Association yesterday asked EPA to address disparate fuel volatility regulations that hinder the sale and expansion of E15 fuel. The RFS says that most retailers are faced with a hopeless decision every spring: stop selling E15 during the summer volatility control season, or secure the appropriate low RVP gasoline blend stock. The RFS goes on to say that for most retailers, neither of those options are acceptable business decisions. Darden Restaurants Incorporated today defended the progress a casual dining restaurant operator has made toward improving its results, even as it swung to a loss in the latest quarter. Overall, for the fiscal first quarter, Darden reported a loss from continuing operations of $19.3 million, or 14 cents a share, compared with a profit of $42.4 million, or 32 cents a share a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Up next, USDA has updated the annual report on farmland cash rents. I'll have more on the Illinois numbers. USDA releases the cash rents report each August. Gary Snitke evaluates the number for the University of Illinois. He says the figures for this year, and these reflect cash rents paid for this year, 2014, do not show anything really new.
We see the same trends across the state that we typically see. Highest cash rents are in central Illinois. This year, the top spot happens to be Logan County with the $308 average cash rent, and we see some lower rents in northern Illinois. DeKalb County would have $278 cash rent. And then Southern Illinois has lower rents as well. Southern Illinois, we get some rents in the $80 to $90 range.
In general, says Gary Schnitke, the higher the productivity of the land, the higher the cash rent. Interestingly, though, cash rents in Illinois this year are about 4 to 5% higher than they were last year. This seems counterintuitive to the expectation, because most would have thought the negotiations taking place last fall would be for lower rents. Schnitke has an explanation.
If you look at what the Professional Farm Managers, Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers, they released their rental survey, and from 2013 to 2014, cash rents did decline. What I think was going on there, though, was that the high cash rents in the county came down a bit, but the low end kept coming up.
The highs were not as high, and the lows were not as low. It appears the lower-end rents moved more than the higher-end rents. Consequently, there was a higher average. It is something Schnitke expects to see again next year.
Yeah, moving into 2015, again, I would not expect the averages to go down all that much, because, you know, there's those low cash rents that may be coming up over time. I would expect the top end to come down, and maybe even $30, $40 an acre on some of those cash rents above average. That's what the Illinois Society of Farm Managers said they expected on their professionally managed land, that, you know, the rents would be down $30 on average from 2014 to 2015. And that might bring down some of the average rents as well.
But maybe not all of them across the state. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Media on University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It is a Friday afternoon. Let's check and see if the folks at the Andersons might be available today to talk to us. Usually we discuss this Friday afternoon with Ben Pruce out of their Everly, Iowa facility. On the other hand, he's not available this afternoon. I suspect maybe busy and away from the office or on the phone line. If I get lucky, Greg Johnson is available in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Actually, it's Brian, Todd.
Oh, hi, Brian. Well, I'll talk to you now, and then we'll get to talk again in a moment or two.
Okay.
But for this time around, let's talk directly about what's happening there at the elevator. How much grain are you taking in, if any at all?
Well, it's been a little slow this week, and that's because most of the area received around 2 inches of rain. We've taken in a little corn, ranging anywhere from 24 to 31% moisture. Not a big run yet, and I think anticipate we'll see more this weekend into the first part of next week.
You have special deals?
Still have a reduced drying deal on through Sunday right now, so obviously we're going to try and attract some bushels. And without it, I think the producer's probably 10 days to maybe 2 weeks away from naturally going in and shelling corn.
What's the wettest corn you would take with that kind of deal?
I think right now our limit has generally been around the 30% level. Anything wetter than that, it gets to be chewed up and hard for us to manage the quality aspect. So we've kind of capped things off at 30%.
Yeah, and soybeans are just still green, right?
Still green. They started to turn, and I don't anticipate, even though there was a few guys that mentioned here this end of this week that they might start some beans towards the end of the latter part of next week, I still think a big bean run probably isn't coming here for another 2 weeks as well.
And very quickly, your bids.
Bids right now tonight, we are 330 quick ship corn. That is by Monday cash. All fall bid is 311. Quick ship soybean bid by the 15th on Monday is 1135.
Support
all
for WYL Agriculture comes from
and
Murray Wise Associates.
July wheat is 514.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
And management and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
It's National Chocolate Milkshake Day. The first milkshakes were alcoholic whiskey drinks. It was not until the turn of the 20th century that the term referred to wholesome drinks made with vanilla, strawberry, or chocolate syrups. By the way, the use of malted milk powder in milkshakes was made famous by Chicago drugstore chain employee Pop Colson. The malted milk became the chain's most popular soda fountain drink. On this day in agricultural history in 1818, Richard Jordan Gatling was born. Before inventing the Gatling gun, he developed a machine for sowing rice, wheat, and other grains, and he also invented a steam plow. In 1910, Alexander Langmuir was born. He is credited with creation of the U.S. Epidemic Intelligence Service. His work contributed to the virtual elimination of polio in the U.S. and a better understanding of other infectious diseases. And in 1958, Jack Kirby demonstrated his invention of a miniaturized electric circuit to his Texas Instrument supervisors. Early the following year, Kirby would apply for a patent for what would become the world's first integrated circuit. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is Illinois Public Media. Up next, the weather forecast from Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute.
This week was both cooler and wetter than last week. The statewide average temperature for this week was 67 degrees. That's 3 degrees below average. We had widespread rain across Illinois thanks to a strong low-pressure system, with the heaviest amounts in western and central Illinois, with totals ranging from 3 to 8 inches. Rushville had 8.01 inches over 3 days. Other sizable amounts included Jacksonville and Quincy with 4.5 inches. Some flooding occurred on parts of the Illinois and Mississippi rivers and their tributaries. This week we saw snow in western South Dakota and frost advisories in northern Minnesota and Wisconsin. Here in Illinois, the average date for seeing that first night of 32 degrees is in early October for northern Illinois and mid-October for central and southern Illinois. In 1 out of 10 years, we have seen it as early as the last week of September. According to the National Weather Service forecast, we aren't likely to see frost just yet in Illinois. Daytime highs for the weekend and next week will run in the upper 60s and low 70s. Sunday morning could be one of the coolest of the week, with the lows ranging from the low 40s in northern Illinois to the mid 40s in central and southern Illinois. The rest of the week should be a little warmer, with those lows in the upper 40s and low 50s. Chance of rain on Monday, otherwise a dry week with plenty of sunshine.
Our thanks to Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, for his update of the agricultural weather forecast for the state of Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the final trades in Chicago and the weekly differences from Friday to Friday. December corn futures went to a high this week of $3.58, a low of $3.35 3/4, a settlement price 18 cents lower from last Friday at $3.38. November contract in the soybeans had a high on the week of $10.28, a low at $9.29.5, and a settlement price at $9.84.5. It finished 37 cents lower. Bean meal in the September contract finished the week at $408, down $28.10. And the bean oil in the September contract on its weekly trade finished at $32.16. It was down 19 cents for the week. Wheat futures in Chicago for the July of next year, that would be the soft red winter wheat contract, went to a high this week at $5.77.5, and its low at $5.36.5. Settlement price there down 35.25 cents at $5.38.25. Now the livestock numbers. Live cattle futures finished $156.27. They were $3.47.5 lower in the October contract. The feeder cattle finished that same October contract at $225.92.5 for 100 pounds, down $1.55. And the lean hogs in the October futures finished a bit higher for the week, up 7.5 cents at $105.70 for 100 pounds. And that's a look at the weekly trade in Chicago and the settlement prices changes from Friday to Friday. This, of course, has been Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.